I call questions without notice.
Who did what when? Who said what when?
Thank you for your point of order.
Every last tidbit of information for entertainment purposes.
Are there any questions?
It's RN Drive's question time. In the house this evening we have Greg Jericho, economics writer for The Guardian Australia. Greg, welcome.
Hello.
Are we interrupting you? Are you doing something else?
I was just quickly checking a bit of Twitter and hope that there might be an answer there, but everything just seems to be Jackie Lambie.
Twitter is never the answer. That's my advice to you.
It's not even a very good question.
And those are the dulcet tones of Hugh Rimmington, reporter for 10 Eyewitness News. Hello. How are you?
Very well.
Great to have you. This is your second time on.
It is.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you here. And the second time too for Sean Kelly, freelance writer and former Labor advisor. Welcome, Sean.
Hi, Rebecca.
It's all boys. Well, I'm not a boy, but it's all boys. We need to acknowledge that. We did try and find some girls, but we just got stuck with boys.
No,
it's not that you're the second choice.
Not that you're the second choice at all.
Oh, I better just leave that and go into round one.
Order.
Round one.
Order.
To Quiz Vegas this week. That's the place for the G2O. That's where world leaders go to get away from it all.
Foreign Affairs has been, I'm just laughing at that song. Foreign Affairs has been in the headlines this week with APEC and the G20 summits dominating the political agenda. Quite often this means Paul Keating will get dragged out of the woodwork or jump out of the coffin or whatever other way you would like to describe his, occasional interventions into Australian public life to assess Australia's foreign policy. Greg Jericho, what recent trade and investment decision made by Australia is he criticising here?
We say, too good for us. No. too good for us. No.
I'm going to move on because we've got time left.
It is a bad decision of the worst kind.
That is a very good impersonation of Skippy.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
He thought it was good enough to repeat.
He did. He didn't think we'd get it the first time. Mm. So, Greg Jericho, can you tell me what he's criticising there?
Was it to do with the, I'm not quite sure of the technical term, but there was a China bank
Yes, you're right.
Deal.
Keep going. You don't know the official name of the bank.
No.
But you've absolutely got it right. Australia's decision to reject China's offer for Australia to become a founding member of the Asian Infrastructure Development Bank. Yes. And Paul Keating, in his normally kind of, moderate ways of describing things, has said it's the worst decision this government has made. He's one for hyperbole. Okay, here it is in context. Paul Keating speaking to Late Line's Tony Jones.
You remember years ago Bob Zelick said, we want China to be a responsible stakeholder. So China says, okay, I'll be a responsible stakeholder. What about this? We will capitalise a new development institution focused on infrastructure. We invite the rest of you as founding members to put in the capital. We say, too good for us. No. too good for us. No.
Why is Skippy an elitist?
Well, it does make me think of Skippy, but I do ask you, Greg Jericho, do you agree with Keating's analysis about this?
I do, to an extent. I think it certainly seems to be one that I think the Treasurer agrees with, but not the Prime Minister. It seems there was a bit of tension within the Cabinet about it. It's not an issue I must admit I've delved into too deeply in terms of the pros and cons, but it does seem to be one where China is, as Keating is suggesting, reaching out to do what we actually want China to do, and we've decided to keep in good with America, perhaps, and keep them as our lead, which is a bit odd given we're also there trying to negotiate a free trade agreement with China. So the narrative perhaps is not completely consistent.
Mm. Hugh Rimmington, any thoughts?
Well, I think the Chinese view that the World Bank is kind of American-dominated and the IMF is sort of Europe-dominated, and so why don't they get into the swing of things
themselves?
They want
something to dominate themselves.
And they can, and you know, these vast funds have enormous capacity for influence. They're very important players. So you can see why the Chinese would want to do it. The only concern about it, I think, a little bit, was whether, you know, on the face of it, you say, well, that's fine, although we obviously are contributors to the World Bank. But on the face of it, you'd say, fine, let's get in there with the Chinese. But there were some questions about governance, about exactly how the money was going to be allocated, about what were the plans, and a little bit more caution.
There were a range of unanswered questions around government, so I remember that being the case. All right, second question to you, Hugh Rimmington. This week, the ABC drew some criticism, shocker, for its coverage of a particular meeting between Tony Abbott and one of the leaders at the 2014 APEC summit. It certainly got News Limited columnist Andrew Bolt fired up on Macquarie Radio. Here he is.
Tonight set new lows on a number of reasons. Bias, taste and news judgment. There is, in effect, doing the Kremlin's propaganda for it. Really, sell the ABC now. It is contemptible what it did. Contemptible.
What is he? It's not my show, he's angry.
It will be, Rebecca.
But what is he getting angry at?
Well, I'm staggered that Andrew Bolt, that's the first time I've heard him complain about bias at the ABC. That's astonishing new development. That's news.
He was criticising a particular thing that was on, I'll give you a hint, on ABC television this
week. This is the 7:30 report piece. Indeed. I didn't actually see it, but it was a skit that had to do with shirt fronting and so on.
It did. 7:30's decision to run a skit lampooning Tony Abbott's threat to shirt front Vladimir Putin over the downing of flight MH17. Communications Minister Malcolm Turnbull called the skit pathetic, adding that it wasn't funny and in very poor taste. Let's hear a bit of that clip now.
It was supposed to be the showdown of the century.
Tony, tough talk, Abbott versus virile Vladimir Putin. How much macho can you take?
That wasn't Malcolm Turnbull. That was the clip from the 7:30 report skit. So I'm going to ask you, Sean Kelly, did you see it and what did you think of it?
I didn't see it. I've heard from a lot of my friends that it wasn't funny at all, and that little clip you played just there bears that out
pretty well,
I think.
That's right.
And that to me is the biggest problem. I mean, I don't have a huge problem with 7:30 or any other news show running a little bit of satire. 7:30's actually run satire for decades. Mm. The Clark and Dawes segment is comic genius. So it seems to me the biggest problem with this is not criticism of anybody, because satire is going to attack governments. That's who's running the show. The biggest problem is nobody laughed.
Yes. Greg Jericho, did you have a chance to watch it or listen to it in your views?
I watched it online only because bagging it.
Right.
And so it was the day after I had a look at it, and it just really didn't fit with the tone of even the humour that you would expect from the 7:30. And I agree, there's nothing wrong with having, you know, the Friday night funny man type thing on a current affairs show. But this for a start, it was very long. So it almost seemed like it was an actual segment rather than the, and before we leave you, here's a bit of a jokey thing. And so you were left wondering, what exactly is this? Is it just a jokey thing, or is it? It's going on for a very long time here.
And
then there was a very unsubtle bit at the end by Lee Sayers, which you never want after a comedy performance of any occasion, where she says, "And of course, there is a very serious side to this issue." And then proceeded to sort of try it. Almost, I think she almost could anticipate.
Yeah, she was like, "Uh oh."
Yep. So this is very important, and it occurs the airplane bombing and so forth, and I'm sorry for the last 6 minutes. Please don't bag.
She could smell the trouble coming.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting. She came out afterwards and distanced herself from the whole thing.
And just quickly, Hugh Rimmington, Are we over? I mean, so much has been made of the Putin, you know, shirt-fronting thing. Are we genuinely over it?
No,
this is
so.
A leading question.
Well, I mean, there was another line there from David Cameron today in his speech to the Parliament where, you know, he described seeing Julie Bishop coming towards him and saying, oh, my Lord, am I going to be shirt-fronted? And they got an appropriate laugh, right. I suppose, in the Parliament. I mean, the thing about it was is that the language was... It fits into a sort of slightly comedic sense people have about Tony Abbott as being, you know, being macho, shirt off, all this kind of stuff. And the notion of him shirt-fronting Vladimir Putin is a funny idea. Hell, weeks later, yes, it's still not so funny.
Funny idea for about 20 minutes. And
yeah,
then
and then there was the interest as to whether he would live up to this business of genuinely confronting him, you know, thrust his finger into his chest of Putin and all this sort of carry on. You know, which wasn't going to happen. It was never going to happen. But he did, when it came down to it, have a conversation with him and lay out what we thought about MH17. So it was worth a laugh. Let's move on.
Indeed. Let's move on to question three, which is to you, Sean Kelly. Mm. Abbott and Putin's meeting wasn't the only item on the APEC agenda this week. China and the United States came to a landmark agreement on greenhouse emission reduction targets. Mm-hmm. China has agreed to slow and then stop its emissions by 2030. Well, the US is said it will reduce emissions by up to 28% by which year?
2025.
Well done.
Thank
Gosh,
you.
Gosh, you've been reading the news. That's wonderful. Okay, all right, we're going to move on to round two in a minute. It's RN Drive. I'm Rebecca Huntley, and it's question time, and it's the question time quiz. My guests are Greg Jericho. Greg Jericho, economics writer for The Guardian Australia, Hugh Rimmington, reporter for 10 Eyewitness News, and Sean Kelly. Freelance writer.
Do it to all of us.
Oh my Lord. You know,
you
I would like
there,
no, I'd like to say that it's because I've been up since 4 o'clock with twins, but really there is no excuse on the national broadcast to not be able to speak the English language. Sean Kelly, former advisor to Prime Minister Julia Gillard and freelance writer. Now on to round two.
Order.
Round two.
Order.
Look how they shine.
Where would the quiz be without the Palmer United Party? We would have nothing to talk about or nothing to laugh about. And indeed, this round is all about the Palmer Not-So-United Party. First question to you, Hugh Rimmington. More cracks have emerged in the PUP this week. Jackie Lambie says she wants Clive Palmer and her fellow senators to pull up their a particular thing.
What I'd like them to do is pull their up and get on with getting some things done for both the Australian people.
So the whole idea is, what was the beep?
What were they going to pull up? I was actually more intrigued by your yellow song. I presume that's because she's famously prances around in yellow, is it?
That's the official colour of the Palmer United Party, which makes sense because there's blue and red and yellow.
Notice how smoothly I diverted away from
that. Not
Sean Kelly should be giving me points there. Yes, nice diversion. You'll make a politician.
She does have a range of beautiful yellow scarves.
Yeah, pull their somethings up. Jocks up.
Well, that would be better, but it's not. It's not. It's actually socks up, and we'll hear that. We'll hear the full audio now.
No, what I'd like them to do is pull their socks up and get on with getting some things done for both the Australian people.
Socks is a bit tame for Jackie. Yeah.
I was really hoping it related to well-hung men, but anyway.
Oh, wow. I think maybe she might have learned her lessons
you think?
About that. But when she says that, because she's got two sons, I think, you can almost feel her say, pull your socks up and clean your room.
Yep.
And, you know, make some dinner and clean the house up. That's kind of, you feel like what she's saying to some of the men in her party ever feeling. She's got that mother's tone in her voice. But on a serious note, how much longer can how much longer can Jackie Lambie stray from the party line before she becomes a PUP senator in name only? Greg Jericho, what do you think?
Well, isn't she kind of already at that stage?
Do you think it's already got there?
Well, I mean, she's vowing to vote against every piece of legislation, and
yes,
regardless of what the party says, and rather wonderfully, she's described this as a conscience vote, which is stretching, I think, the bounds of what a conscience vote normally is.
Yes, a conscience vote doesn't normally apply to mass. Every single piece of legislation you're faced with. No, that's
yeah,
right.
I think it's basically because there is no actual vote on the army pay, which is the whole issue that's, I guess, spurred this on. And so she's taken that the conscience relates to everything else. And for me, the best thing about this story this week was when her chief of staff was sacked from the party, that she first expressed surprise that he actually was in the party and then actual happiness that he was no longer in it, because she thought her office should be apolitical. And so...
Because you wouldn't want a political...
centre. I mean, politics has got far too much politics in it. And, I think that... At this point, she probably feels there's benefit in still being a member of PUP, but I think she's pushing the bounds to see how can she actually be almost basically an independent and without... before she gets...
Well, she started as an independent, you know, that was...
Yeah,
So, I mean, before we... Well, I've got a few questions for the other panellists. Before we move on, you've actually ruined my next question, which is, who did Clive Palmer expel from his party this week and why?
Rob Messenger.
But given I can't answer that ask that question, we've got a bit of time. I did want to ask Sean Kelly about, if you're advising Jackie Lambie and you have advised, you know, senior politicians, would you tell her to continue doing what she's doing, or actually to pull her head in?
It would be a combination. I would tell her and a lot of MPs in the current parliament, including Clive and Joe Hockey, that sometimes silence is the best thing of all. I think there are a lot of MPs in this particular parliament that are making the mistake of thinking any airtime is good time, and it's absolutely not. That said, I think Jackie Lambie's probably onto a fair thing on this defence pay. It is a big deal to be capping defence pay at a time when you are asking more of the defence forces in terms of their commitment in the Middle East, at a time when you're telling the defence forces that they might be on dangerous ground wearing their uniforms on Australian streets. It's politically, at least, I think she is potentially on fairly strong ground.
And I mean, there's a policy dimension to it and a personal dimension to it. You feel when she's speaking about it that it's not opportunistic necessarily. It's something that really comes from experience and that she genuinely cares.
Absolutely, because of her background in the Defence Forces. And I think that's absolutely right, and that's worth bearing in mind.
Hugh Remington, we make a lot of fun about Jackie Lambie. It's a bit of a national sport. What do you think the media's view of her really is? Are they taking her seriously?
Well, anyone who can take oxygen from Clive Palmer is quite a phenomenon in the political sphere. It's interesting about the pay business, because on one level, David Lionhelm, the senator, the Liberal Democratic senator, put out a really good article, actually pointing out that if you enter the army as an absolute base digger without finishing year 12, you're in there as a private, you're making about $57,000 a year. As a corporal, you can make a six-figure sum. When you go overseas, and I've done this, when you go overseas to the Middle East with Australian soldiers, they get a briefing before they go in there when you're in these coalitions of other forces. And one of the things they drill into the Australian troops over there is, don't ever talk about your pay with forces from another nation. The reason for that is the Aussies are much better paid than most other people they're going to come up against.
Imagine the US.
Yes, I think so. Some of them can make good money. So on one level, they are well paid. The other level, which I think is where it has been badly handled by the government, is that they can't negotiate, they can't bargain over their pays. They get what they're given, more or less. And that the government has essentially used them, and with a lower than inflation pay increase, essentially to put a signal down about where public sector pay should go. And I think it should have gone the other way around. Negotiate whatever you get with the public sector, and then don't expect soldiers to get more than that, or service personnel to get more than that. But it does seem a little bit crook to use them as the marker in the sand.
Absolutely.
Okay, there's one more question for this round, and anyone can answer it. How long has it been since Clive Palmer last spoke to Jackie Lambie? Any
ideas? Mean other than through the media?
Yeah, this is a good point. He has probably been sending a message through, but actually picked up the phone.
Interesting.
And talk to any ideas?
I don't know.
Longer than a couple of days?
I would guess 2 weeks.
You are absolutely right. 2 weeks. Yes, well done. Clive Palmer said on RN Drive yesterday evening that he hasn't spoken to the woman in 2 weeks.
That woman.
Wow.
Bear in mind that he put out two press releases on the day, one of them urging her to challenge him for the party leadership, yes. And the other one was the one in which he called her a drama queen.
Yes.
So there's the old
buttering her up. He knows how to talk to a lady.
There's the old rule in politics that people go outside through the public because they can't get a hearing internally. You know, if you can talk to someone privately, you don't need to talk to them publicly. Mm. So presumably it's broken down to such a degree that the only way they can talk to each other is to call each other drama queens and worse through the airways.
Well, let me just tell the three of you here, don't tell anybody else, that in fact RN Drive's Waleed Alay has spoken to Jackie Lambie twice in the last 2 weeks. So is he the one pulling the strings? Secret is he leader. The puppet master?
Maybe he should be leading the PUP.
That's right.
I
believe he has some dinosaurs parked in his garden there in Melbourne, and I think he's planning a takeover.
Oh, my gosh. All right, on to round three.
Order!
Round three.
Order!
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Ooh.
That's a great way to start a weekend, a bit of Metallica. This week's talks broke down between the government and the opposition over changes to Australia's RET, renewable energy target. Question one to you, Sean Kelly. How did Labor's Mark Butler break the news to the government about these broken down talks? It wasn't via a text message.
He wrote a letter.
He did write a letter. Is that a bad? It's like a Dear John letter. It's not. Is it? Is it in politics? Is it when once you've got a letter? Is it before you even open it? Do you know it's going to be bad news?
Look, I think the government probably knew this was coming. It's a little bit of a political strategy because you hand
for
over,
Labor
for Labor yeah. because you hand over the letter. You've done the formal thing, and then you get to give that letter to the media. All your reasons are set out very formally in logical order. It looks like you've approached the government with respect. So it's not a bad way to do things all in all.
It's a tactic.
It is a tactic.
Yeah. Any views from anybody on the panel about who might bear responsibility for this breakdown? You don't have to have views.
Look, I think it does sound to me like the government have been a little bit too inflexible. They insisted on a particular cut from 41,000 gigatons of renewable energy to 26,000, and it sounds to me like they haven't been at all willing to budge on that.
But you would say that.
I would say that. I would say that. That is true. But there's been no indication from the government publicly that they've been willing to budge. And a negotiation needs to be a negotiation.
Greg Jericho?
I'd suggest it's in both their interests for it to have broken down. I don't think either of them really...
That might be
wanted
true.
It a bit, yeah. I think. But it's certainly Labor, I think it's more in their interest for it to break down. And it was also a very nice timing for when they announced it, because it was the morning just before the USA-China emissions deal was done. So it made it actually look like they were kind of in step with what was going on. I think if they'd done it afterwards, it almost would have seemed a bit reactive.
I agree, actually. Sometimes in politics, most of the time, the timing goes against you, but occasionally it falls in your lap, and that gave them some momentum on it, I think.
Okay, question two to you, Greg Jericho. Still on climate change issues, renewable energy, the Climate Council put out a report this week showing that investment in renewable energy had dropped how many percentage points? We're giving you the hard ones.
Yeah, you have.
It's because we think you're really clever. We think everybody's clever, but, you know, it's because you're in Canberra we think you're extra clever.
that ruse has worked then to my disadvantage. Yeah.
Anybody now can
I'll
answer.
Go 20%.
Oh, no, you're much higher. Much, much higher. Anybody else? Nobody shaking their head?
50?
I know the answer just because it's on this page. 70%. Wow. 70%.
I know none of the answers to the questions Greg is getting asked.
All right. Yeah, neither did I before. That's why it's wonderful to have the paper in front of you. Question three to Hugh Rimmington. You'll probably get this one. According to John Grimes from the Solar Council, what has Tony Abbott tried to do to Labor and plans to do to the United Party? We have some audio with a beep.
This is Tony Abbott's problem. He first thought that he could actually Labor. Now that Labor said, no, you're going too far, he's going to try and the Palmer United Party. I think they're not for
sleep is awful. I'm glad you've got very that one, rude, but it's a Friday night. This is when we're relaxed.
Wedge?
Yep, very well done. Oh. Wedge. Let's hear it in full.
This is Tony Abbott's problem. He first thought that he could actually wedge Labor. Now that Labor said, no, you're going too far, he's going to try and wedge the Palm United Party. I think they're not for wedging.
Reminds me of Richard Nixon, actually. You know all those things with the tapes from inside the White House? And when they got published, the transcripts got published, and it kept on saying expletive deleted, and expletive deleted, expletive deleted, expletive deleted. And everyone thought, the man is so outrageously profane. And then he'd complain. Actually, all I'd say was something like damn, or, you know, get the old damn, whatever the hell it was. And in fact, he didn't swear that much, but they just decided that anything counted as an expletive and that they needed to protect him. So sometimes a beep does you more damage than the actual
word. Can you imagine if there were any tapes of Lyndon Johnson? They would have been far worse. Mm. There would have been hardly anything, any words on the page.
Kevin Rudd,
all blacked out. Was Kevin Rudd a...
I'm staying quiet.
Kelly. No, just no, between us. Because really, honestly, on a
it's
Friday...
Everyone's listening to the cricket.
Oh, look, I will just say...
Who was the worst swearer? Was it Julie Gillard or Kevin Rudd?
I will only say worst? That all politicians are human and Labor politicians are perhaps more human in this respect than others.
So who swore more, Julie Gillard or Kevin Rudd?
Look, it would depend on their mood, Rebecca.
Oh, really, would it?
You're not going to get more out of me than that.
I guess that Kevin would be more of a swearer than Julia. That's my view.
Loyal until the day he died.
That's a very, very good way to lead into round four.
Order! Round four.
Order!
This is the final round and it's a free-for-all. Anyone can jump in if you know the answer. Question one, to ensure Barack Obama's safety during the G20, what did his security team order to be completely stripped?
Oh, it's all the furniture, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Out of the hotel floor or whatever.
An entire floor of the Marriott Hotel in Brisbane. That would be unbelievably expensive.
What do you think? What are you going to put in? You know, do they sort of miraculously turn up? Do they go down to IKEA and spend the rest of the day there going, I can never get these things to, we'll sit on the flat
packs. Well, he brings his own car, so he must bring a lot of stuff with him.
Brings a tent.
Sean Kelly, do you think he would be, I mean, there must be, look, I mean, he would have the most security of pretty much any world leader, but lots of other leaders have security. Did you ever notice a kind of a frustration when you worked for the Prime Minister about that she couldn't just spontaneously move from one place to another without kind of, you know, lots of men with little things in their ears going forward and stuff?
But I think Australia, you know, to sound a little patriotic here, I think Australia is still quite remarkable. I mean, I've sat for coffees with both Kevin and Julia in cafes with maybe one or two people coming along to say hello, but
that might have something to do with it. He was keeping away from them. Nobody wanted to say anything.
I genuinely think that's a great thing about Australia.
I agree. Yep. I think it's remarkable to see the way the access that you get to politicians. I hope in these levels of heightened senses of threat with Tony Abbott consistently advising anyone that all they need is, what is it, an iPhone and a victim and a knife and they can, whatever. I wish you'd stop saying that. But that there is this heightened level of threat. I hope it doesn't stop that sense of contact.
All right, next question. Which member of the Greens has had to cancel his travel plans recently?
Richard Di Natale.
Well done. And why was that?
He's a doctor and he wanted to go to West Africa to have a look at Ebola issues, and he wanted to get some consular help when he got there. Can I just say, it was went enormously unreported, but the UN envoy who deals with Ebola gave evidence this week urging tourists to go to Ebola-affected countries to help prop up their economy. So
really?
He did. It was quite a bizarre thing to say. He said, look, you can travel in and out there. There's only a small amount of area. I want you all to go in there.
Good luck.
So when you consider that he was basically laughed at, Richard Di Natale, if we even wanted to go there, there's the UN guy this week.
Wow. Does that say that we are being paranoid about going to... Because what happened was Foreign Minister Julie Bishop advised him it was too dangerous told him to get health insurance if he chose to go, but made the decision that basically consular High Commission staff would be stretched thin for one man. That was her view.
Well, there's not going to be an enormous amount of diplomatic presence, I don't imagine, on the ground.
No,
but,
exactly.
But it seemed reasonable. For, you know, he's a doctor, he's reasonably smart, he can go in there, he can have a look. I think he was probably grandstanding a little bit, but they're also probably grandstanding at shutting him down.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, final question. What does Bill Shorten plan to say to Vladimir Putin if he runs into him at the G20 this weekend?
No, I'm empty-handed.
Well, that's quite
something
close.
About a
I mean, Vladimir,
smile,
Vladimir Putin, smile. When if he runs into Bill Shorten, will say, "Can you get me a latte?" Or we think he's it's one a, of
yes.
the guys.
Where's my car?
Yeah, that's right. Just park it under cover, please. No, no. Look, Sean Kelly, you were very close. What did you just say? You're coming up blank.
Empty-handed. He's going to slap him repeatedly.
No. Greg Jericho?
That'd be interesting to watch.
Does it involve his incredibly tortured analogy about a crocodile swallowing a story or something?
Oh, we do make fun of Bill Shorten's turn of phrase here often. No, he said he was going to say nothing to him. Absolutely
nothing.
That'll
get him.
Silent treatment.
That'll get him.
I didn't think about the silent treatment. That will work. And then Vladimir Putin says, "We'll say, why is that waiter not saying anything to me? I need him to get me a latte." No. He will say he is going to say nothing. Which, and I think this is interesting. I'm just going to editorialize.
Putin doesn't drink lattes.
He has his coffee black.
Nitroglycerine.
That's exactly right.
Demi-tasse.
Well, a lot has been made of, obviously, that shirt-fronting comment and then Tony Abbott not necessarily, you know, being as aggressive as he said he was going to be, but, of course, raising the issues. Bill Shorten did, you know, a couple of weeks ago say that he was going to, you know, speak very strongly and, you know, that Australians were very angry and he's now going to say nothing. So is this a kind of a backflip? From Bill Shorten.
Sounds very primary school. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to say nothing to you at all. I'm going to watch you crumble. I'm going to watch you. You're going to leave in tears, Vladimir.
Maybe he's going to give him the stink eye. You know,
There was a lot of weird stuff going on in these international forums. You had President Obama chewing gum. That's a bit high school.
It was I think he's trying to give up smoking.
That is true. That is true. Still gum chewing.
It is. But would we rather he have nicotine withdrawals?
Wow.
Just catch up with Joe for a bit of a gar.
You had a Vladimir Putin cracking on to the Chinese president's wife.
He was. He put a little cape over her. Sure. She was smiling. She asked for it.
It is like high school. It
brings back memory to Ryza Gorbachev. Remember that when she was Mikhail Gorbachev's wife was such a glamorous thing. And
she was.
We were fawning over her. Back in the day, Sean, you're far too young.
I don't know what perestroika means. I don't.
Look, it's all very interesting, and I'm sure we'll be speaking more about it next week. Before we've got to end very, very soon, but before we go, predictions for a headline next week. First to you, Sean Kelly.
Oh, headline next week. Come back to me, Rebecca.
Okay.
Abbott wins in a knockout in the fourth round.
Oh, wow. And Greg Jericho, anything? Do you have something serious to say? That would be
no,
good.
Never.
Nothing serious.
Something about Putin's back in the USSR or something.
Oh, okay.
Greg Jericho knows answer to Rebecca Huntley quiz question.
Yes.
That's a very
breaks
good,
his duck.
A good point to end on. It's RN Drive. I'm Rebecca Huntley. That's the end of the Question Time quiz. Many thanks to my guests, Greg Jericho, economics writer for The Guardian Australia. Thank you so much, Greg.
Pleasure, Rebecca.
Hugh Remington, reporter for 10 Eyewitness News. Thank you, Hugh.
Pleasure, Rebecca.
And Sean Kelly, former advisor to Prime Minister Julia Gillard and generally unhelpful about telling us gossip about former prime ministers, but a wonderful guest and freelance writer. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
On the Health Report, the use and abuse of antibiotics. We'll dissect a new report. Should smokers be screened with CT scans to detect early lung cancers? It's controversial. Let them burn, say some. And speaking of smoking, are e-cigarettes the answer with harmless flavourings? Not, say researchers who claim you can get a disease called bronchiolitis obliterans from them. And if you want to hear more, why don't you smoke a podcast of the Health Report from RN's website?